Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
He brings his son in scarf and shirt, wide-eyed at the language of men, like his father did before his first game, preparing at the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Robbie?
Oh, Dan, how are you? Welcome back.
Thanks,
the usual.
Mate. Yeah, lager. Usual, please. Yes, a pint of any lager. Thanks.
Okay, yeah, very specific taste you have, don't you?
Yeah.
Literally any lager. Yeah, how's your week been?
It's been all right. Yeah, it's been nice, hasn't it? Spring. Here.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is nice. So I went to see the some lambing.
Did you?
At the sheep pen.
Do you know, I went to a thing. I live in Vancouver for a year,
yep.
As you know, and I went to a thing called the Pacific National Exhibition, I think it's called, something like that. And it's like a big sort of, it's like a sort of agricultural fair, yep. Slightly different, but like a sort of Canadian version. And there was like a tent, like a sort of barny tent, I think, and there were people going into it, but there was no sign saying what was happening. I just went in and sat down, the people sat around there. I didn't know what was going to happen.
And you got sheared?
No, they just brought out a cow and it just gave birth in front of us. I was like, I did not know that was going to happen.
Just wheeled it out.
But they just dragged it out and then it just gave birth. And I didn't even know what was going to happen. I had no idea. But I mean, I knew what calf birth is.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Very much like that, except with sheep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very good, very good. Mm. Can I say, Dan, by the way, I had no idea about your love of cars until last night.
Yep.
You were so passionate and knowledgeable during your talk at the Correct Realm Sports Car Enthusiast meeting last night.
Yeah.
So knowledgeable. As I recall, like I was sort of working behind the bars. So I couldn't hear it fully. I was wondering if you could just recap. Could you remind me of the five reasons you gave why the Ferrari 296 GTS is superior to the Porsche 911 Targa 4S? What were your five main reasons?
Well, first of all, heated seats in the Ferrari are better.
Oh, yeah. Right. So they both have, but the Ferrari ones are better.
They heat up slightly warmer. They do. They were 0-60 of heat up.
Okay.
Quicker.
Right. So that's than one the thing. Porsche. Heated seats are better.
Second thing is the Porsche has got those lights at the front that pop up like the frog eye lights. Don't like them.
Okay. Does the Ferrari not then?
Doesn't have them. No, it just has normal lights.
All right.
Yep. Third reason?
Yeah, third reason, please.
Third reason is the Ferrari's totally electric.
Is it?
Yeah, that one is. Yeah, and
just,
the fourth reason.
Remind myself quickly in my mind because I don't remember that.
You don't need to check it because it's definitely right. And then the fourth reason is.
It seems to have I thought it had like a 120 degree V6 engine, though. No?
Yeah, but an electric V6.
Okay, right, that's cool. What was your fourth one?
Fourth one was tell you what, the Ferrari is it's better on ice, in icy conditions.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow. What's the science behind that?
Yeah, it sits slightly lower to the ground and gives it a better balance.
Okay, yep. And the fifth and final, and as fifth, you said, the final, most important one you said last night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The most important one is that the Porsche doesn't come with sunroof as standard, whereas the Ferrari does. So,
I'm not familiar with that particular model. But I don't see a lot,
as you know,
a massive
petrol head. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks for that.
Thanks.
I'm not a big sports car guy, but I'm sure everyone will let us know if they've made any errors at all there.
Yeah. Robbie, I haven't.
Todd.com. Speaking of which, who is that driving over the hills in a Ferrari? I think. Okay, can you see that? I think it might be the comedian Elliot. Still Elliot.
Elliot.
He is parked him right in the front lounge.
Yeah, I haven't actually even passed my driving test, so this is quite it's nice. The insurance on this is insane.
It did look a little bumpy, the drive. Yeah.
It's all right. We've said before, you don't. Driving licenses aren't really needed in the correct way.
No, it's more of a driving vibe. If you get the right vibe, you may drive. Yeah. How are you doing? How's your journey here?
I'm very well. It's been nice. It's been, I'm all good.
Excellent. I've got heat exhaustion, just so you know. I ran the Rome Marathon at the weekend and I got ill, basically.
Is this genuine? Okay, yeah.
I just suddenly thought I should explain it. If I suddenly look a bit dire. So I didn't know what heat exhaustion was, but it turns out I just thought, I'm just tired because I'm running
so
26 miles. And it turned out I was just on my way to death.
Yeah.
But luckily I've survived, but I'm still feeling a little bit weak and pathetic. Oh. So that's just a disclaimer if I'm unsatisfactory. So you can't speak.
Yeah. Well done.
Anyway, here to talk pubs. Are you a pub man?
Yeah, I love a pub. As I've gotten older, I realised I was more of a pub guy. I think this time last year that it had happened, I went on a night out with some friends in Shoreditch and we went into a club and I was like, everyone in here is too young and I can't hear myself speak to my friends. And I was like, it's happened.
Yeah.
I no longer want to go out and chat to women and be at a club. I want to go into a bar. Me and my friend, we were in this pub one night after a gig, ignoring all the people talking around us because on the TV screen they were showing a Premier League game from about 2012 when Yaya Toure was putting in a hell of a performance, and we just sat there for the whole night having a few jars, just going, "Oh, what a player he was!" Like, I was like, "Oh, it's happening!" And I love it. I love it. Like, I love being that.
I was going to say, the relief when your mates at that sort of stage, when you sort of go, should we just go to the pub instead? And they go, yes. And you're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
And then it's done.
I'm a fan of a real shit pub as well.
Yeah.
Like a proper, that we're going to stay open till 3.
Yeah.
There's a place in Soho, I won't say the name because it gives it away, but I'm sure the people who go to it will know of it.
Okay.
It's sort of quite a bar where everyone ends up.
Okay.
Because I find Soho one of those areas where when I'm gigging uptown and stuff, I always want to go for a pint afterwards. And it used to be, I used to go to the Hippodrome. I don't even gamble, but it was just, it's just open on a late show. And there's this other bar we go to, but Soho's full of that, like, you know, that top drawer and things like that, where they go around and like, they ask chefs, like, what's your favorite restaurant and all of that. And then everyone always says this place, the Devonshire, is the best pub. And you go in there because they do supposedly the best Guinness.
Yeah.
And like every pint of Guinness that has ever existed, it tastes like, because Guinness is the biggest. I love Guinness. I know everyone on this podcast chooses Guinness.
Yeah.
Guinness tastes like Guinness. And there's been a huge campaign for Guinness.
Yeah.
That I think, not to be all conspiracy theory about it, is made by Guinness. The split in the G is to get you to drink faster so they can sell more Guinness.
Yeah.
The two poor thing, whenever you speak to anyone about why that happens, and they're like, well, yeah, it made sense in the 1920s when they used to have these certain types of handles, but now you don't need that. And I went to that pub, the Devonshire, which everyone talks about. It's £7 a pint. Yeah. And the Guinness tastes like Guinness. And it's not a traditional Irish pub because it's just full of Tories. Hey, like £7. There might as well be a picture of Thatcher on the wall. It's not an Irish pub whatsoever. It's just full of like city boys paying £7 a Guinness, thinking that they're being authentic.
Yeah.
So you think we're all being controlled by Big Guinness, essentially?
100%. Yeah. Guinness runs the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just like a proper shit bar. It's not trying to be fancy. You go in there and you can just chat with your mates. The people in there are cool.
Yeah.
Hey, we're meant to shut at, you know, we're meant to shut at 12, but we're going to stay open for a little bit longer if you boys want.
And I love that.
Yeah. Oh, that's always nice.
Terrific. We're going to get on to designing your pub now, Elliot. But first of all, Daniel, would you like to explain to Elliot your bell?
Oh, yeah. I've got this bell, Elliot. It rings like that. And if that goes off, it means that one of your choices is going to mysteriously materialise in front of us. And you can...
Oh, really?
You can drink it. You can take it away with you. You can do whatever you want. It's up to you. It's no pressure.
Oh, there's one I really hope it isn't.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see.
I will question you again on the phrase going off for a bit.
Did I say going off
you
again?
The bell, if the bell goes
if
off.
The bell goes off.
Only fire alarm bells go off. Other bells ring, I would suspect.
Yeah.
Okay. And you get two choices on draft for your Moon Underwater pub. What's your first choice?
I went with Heineken.
No.
Oh, that's straight
in. That was very fast from the bell.
Unbelievable. Was that the one you're hoping it wasn't?
No, that's the one I know people will be wondering. Well, all my choices have reason to them rather than like I just like them as a drink.
Good, but good.
This is
some homework.
One of the few I chose that I really enjoy as a drink.
Okay, here it is. Heineken magically. Heineken. Appearing in front of us, shimmering in the light, is always amazed by the magic of the Moon Underwater, the
it's
way it just makes these things appear. Sometimes it takes a little while for the third one to appear, though.
Because well, I've got the third
it's
one.
Got too just, much stuff in its bag.
I'm just thinking, you know, how where's my bottle opener? I'm thinking, there it is.
Oh, it's just appeared in front of us by magic. Again,
I love this.
If you want to open it, you can.
Are you guys going to have one as well?
Yes, I will. Yeah.
That's the worst. I said when I was on the way here, I was like, there's no way I'm going to.
It's a really weird one.
Right, yeah, but I'll do it.
The Moon Underwater, for some reason, keeps materializing a very difficult to work bottle opener.
Yeah.
I had a big chat with myself on the way here, like, oh, I've got jiu-jitsu later. I'm not going to have a drink. And we've got 4 seconds of seeing a bit.
Welcome to my life here. So regularly, I'm like, no, I'm not going to have anything. And then you go, oh.
I have that problem because of like shows and stuff all the time at gigs. I always have a couple pints and I gig probably like 6 nights a week. So I go, am I an alcoholic? Because like if I have like 2 beers at a show or something, you go, that's quite a lot. But then I think the thing you have to do is you have to find people who are worse, who drink more than you.
Yeah.
And go, well, I'm not them.
Yeah.
And then that's just sort of how you have to live your life when you drink. You just have to find people slowly falling down faster and worse than you and go, all right, it could be worse. I could be them.
Yeah. No, that's a healthy viewpoint. Why Heineken?
I think Heineken as a draft beer is a good getting drunk beer. That's a beer I'll drink if I'm going to drink. Yeah. And if I'm going to go to the football and get drunk. Because look, Guinness, like I know I said a lot about Guinness. Guinness is a great beer. Guinness is a beer that I would love to drink, but you can't get drunk on it. You can, but it's too heavy.
Yeah.
But Heineken, if I'm going to go out and have like between 8 to 10 pints, I want Heineken.
Coors Light's the one for me.
Really?
That's
a good shout.
Thank you. Yeah.
The light beers are good. I like those.
You're the first one that said that. Everyone
is disgusted.
Yeah. Hates him for it.
No, but I think there's too much around alcohol. I think there's too much snobbery.
Yeah.
And especially within the world of the IPA.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, there's so much hatred towards certain beers and people get really stuck. And it's just like, no, it's just the thing that's good about alcohol is it's who you're with, who you get, what the event that you're doing.
Yeah.
If I'm just want like a bottle of beer at home after I've done something or just because I'm chilling, I'm watching the football, I'll have a Heineken. It's just an easy, I know what I'm getting. I enjoy that beer.
Yeah.
That to me is like what sort of a good beer does is I'll just see that on tap. Oh, fuck yeah, Heineken, great.
If I'm spending a Sunday afternoon in the pub watching 3 separate football matches, I don't want an 8.2% double IPA because I'll be sick in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I agree completely. I've not had a Heineken for a while. It's got quite distinct taste for the sort of mainstreamy lager, isn't it?
I haven't drunk Heineken for a long 5%.
But instantly, you recognise the taste. Yeah. Not like the other ones. Yeah.
No, there was one of the coolest things I've ever seen is I was in this bar in Edinburgh doing the Fringe. I got chatting to these Dutch dudes. They're really cool and they were comedy promoters of some sort. I don't really know what they did. And I went to get around in and he went, no, dude, I'll get it. I'm like, what? He was like, I'll get it. And he comes to the bar with me and he went, could I get 4 Heinekens? And they're like, yeah. And then he brought out this card. Ooh. And the barman was like, I've got to get my manager. And then he the manager came over and went, is this real? And I was like, yeah. And this guy had done this thing for Heineken, some design thing. So wherever he went in the world with this card, he could just get free Heineken.
Wow.
And I was like, man, how are you not dead?
Yeah. So it's like a Nando's.
Like a Nando's. Well, I had a friend who had one of those as well, right, that genuinely stopped in Nando's in Liverpool Street. Like people stopped. A guy went, fuck off, is it real? My mate had one. And just, it was incredible. You could just rinse Nando's.
Yeah.
And like whenever we'd meet up, we'd just go to Nando's and order whatever you want. Yeah. It is insane. Like it's what people should be doing with that is like ordering loads of food and giving it to the homeless.
Yeah.
But you know, also I want some.
Yeah. And also the good thing with the Heineken one is it wouldn't be socially responsible to give loads of Heineken to the homeless. So you should drink it yourself.
I'm a big proponent of buying the homeless booze. Like I don't do it, but I think
it's a good idea.
They're having a rough day. They deserve a drink more than anyone. I don't understand, you know, when it comes to drink or drugs, and people are like, oh, the homeless are all on drink or drugs. They're like, yeah, well, what else?
Yeah, you would be, wouldn't you?
What else would you do if you were living, you know, on the street? And it was, you know, you got to go through, like, the humiliation of it. People are rude to you. They're nasty. Like, why wouldn't you? I'd want a fucking beer.
Yeah.
At
least.
The beer I'd get them would be Heineken because it's just a good drinking beer.
Dan, what do you know about Heineken?
Well, if you look at the bottle, right, there's a thing there. There's two little medals.
Oh, yeah.
Medal d'Or Paris 1875 and the Grand Prix Paris 1889. That's two of the first awards that it won. First one was at the International Maritime Exhibition in 1875, and the second one was an honorary diploma at the International Colonial and Export Exhibition. So it was winning awards quite early on. What's weird about it is that the guy that found it, Gerard Adrian Heineken, he bought a brewery in Holland in 1864, which had dated back 300 years before that. And then he says, and it was started brewing Heineken in 1873. You're like, what? Why did it take 9 years when you've bought an existing brewery?
Right.
I don't really understand what happened. But then immediately after that, it won those awards and they've still got that on the bottle. That's what that is.
Great Heineken knowledge, Dan.
And stats-wise, it's pretty incredible. So 25 million Heinekens are served every day across 192 countries. In 2011, 2.74 billion litres of Heineken were produced worldwide.
Yes, go on.
In a year.
I
can't even imagine. It feels like it's the Pacific Ocean. It's just filled with Heineken that much.
But it's just because it's so simple to drink.
Mm.
It's not, you know, and I think, like I say, like, yeah, there's better beers out there for sure. Do you know what it's like? It's like, it's Die Hard of beers. Die Hard isn't the best film ever made, but if it's on, you watch it.
Yeah.
Because it's just easy. It's just, you forget, every time you have it, it's fun. You go, oh, yeah, this is a well, and that's what Heineken is. It's just very well done, simple beer, in my opinion. And, you know, there is going to be, I know there'll be some like beer nerd listening to this who goes like, oh, I prefer like this Belgium, whatever, you know, that's like, is like 14%. And yeah, that is better.
Yeah.
But you're a connoisseur. Yeah. Like, you know about beer. I don't really, I don't drink beer because I care about how it's made.
Yeah.
I drink beer because I like the environment that I'm in. I'm having fun with some friends. You have a beer, you start having a good time.
Yeah. Horses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah.
Drinks.
Yeah. No judgment.
No judgment. No judgment here at the middle of the window. Judgment-free zone.
No, there's one you should judge me on.
Well, let's see. Here's your next one, because now it's time for your second draft choice.
K-Cider. this is the worst drink I've ever drunk. It's so bad. But when we were sort of like 13, 14, and you'd go, you know, you'd go drinking for the first time, nobody knew anything about alcohol. But the reason you drank was to get drunk. Mm. And all my mates would be like, oh, you want to get that K cider? That's like really, and this stuff, it tastes like piss. it's the worst thing. I'm so glad that bell didn't ring.
No, you were lucky because Richard Archer of Hard Fight came on. He chose it, and we did bring out the Cape Cider, didn't we?
It appeared magically.
It wasn't quite as bad as I remembered.
It was better than I remember.
But we didn't drink that much.
Why was it? What was his reasoning for bringing it?
Similar reason, I think. Yeah.
I think it's a real.
Oh no! Because, no, his was more like in the 90s when we were sort of at uni and stuff. Cape Cider was sort of a semi-cool drink, like
really?
Because of the black bottle and stuff.
It was a little bit trendy, more so than your Strongbow type thing.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise how strong it was.
Yeah.
8%. Yeah.
Well, in those days, it was 8.5, but it's gone down to 7.5.
Right. Yeah, it was 8 when we used to, because there's like a natural progression of when you start. Alcohol companies know what they're doing. They know teenagers are going to buy drink. That's why you've got WKD. WKD is... The first, it's blue. I remember when I was 16 and my parents would let me have a drink, or I'd be like, "Can I get a WKD?" And my dad would be like, "For fuck's sake!"
Yeah, come back to your dad.
furious about it, but he'd get me a WKD, and that was amazing. That was having his sugar. It was just essentially an ice lolly.
Yeah.
But when I started drinking K cider, that's when I discovered what really being drunk was.
Yeah.
What. You drink that and you're out with your friends, you're sat in a park somewhere, and you know, like pictures of broken Britain.
Yeah.
That's what during times of austerity, as that word's being bandied about, sort of 2009, when I was first discovering drinking, K cider was one of the first drinks I had that I was like, oh, I didn't know that alcohol made you like that, loud and annoying.
WKD didn't do that.
No. And you'd have like two or three of them and you'd just be like fucked. And that's like a drink that always, whenever I see it in a shop, I sort of look at it like a little bit of hatred, but also a little bit of like, hello, old friend.
A little bit of nostalgia.
I used to drink cider at the time, so I would have case had a fairly regularly sort of thing. I remember thinking of it as a sort of premium product at the time. What's your policy on drinking when you're doing live comedy?
I mean, my policy on drinking is doing anything really. Yeah. Like I could be head of a nuclear power plant. I'm gonna have a couple of beers.
Homer Simpson.
Yeah, more or less. I think there's a limit. I think if you're doing things like the Edinburgh Fringe and you're doing a late show, like Late and Live, and you're on at 2 a.m, have a few beers, go on, like, doesn't really matter what state you're in. If you're, I notice if I'm trying out new stuff, I like to do things either. Sometimes I like to go on stage absolutely stone cold sober after I've been to the gym, and that's when I feel at my best. But there's other times where I'm like, all right, maybe you'll think of something a bit more creative if you've had a drink. Usually not. What does sometimes help is actually if I'm a little bit stoned, which I don't know what your policy of saying that on this podcast is, but here we are.
Whatever your pub wants to be.
Yeah. So I find that, like, not going on, I'm not a big stoner or anything, but I find like a little pool of a weed vape here and there, and you go on and it's like, right, what am I saying? What are the lines that I have to learn? And I'm a lot more present in the room, whereas drink makes me a lot more excited to go on stage.
Yeah.
Like, drink makes me a lot more like, oh, I'm going to have fun. And last night I was doing a Top Secret. I went over the road. I was going through my lines. It was new material night. I had a couple of Guinnesses. And then when I was on stage, I could feel I'd had a couple of Guinnesses and I was a bit more like shouting stuff. And I forget, like, people can't see what I look like. I still think I'm the fat little emo kid that I was at school, but I'm like a 6'1" with this South London accent. I forget that I come across quite like intimidating sometimes, but I in my head don't realize that. So I think alcohol can make me a bit more perceived to be leery when I think I'm being friendly. So whereas like weed makes me a lot more like chilled.
Yeah.
But you know, the problem is it, I would rather be on stage a bit too drunk than a bit too stoned.
Okay.
Because
you have more energy.
You when you don't get a laugh and you're stoned, you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
When it's like bombing while you're drunk's fun. Bombing while you're stoned is an existential crisis. Oh, no. Like, you really feel it, man. Like, oh, you feel God. Like a room hate you.
And you
pick up on the energy. But the best thing to be is sober. I like taking a drink on with me.
Yeah.
I love having a drink on stage with me. I know I know some absolutely world-class comedians, people like Daniel Sloss, who just, yeah, he loves having a drink on stage. Yeah. It'd be ludicrous to say to him he wasn't going to have a drink on stage. Yeah. But then there's people like my dad who cannot believe, see that as a very cavalier attitude.
Yeah.
Mm. See that as like rude to the audience that you would have a drink on stage. Yeah. I think there's like a...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think there's like a happy medium between the both.
Yeah.
I think going on sober... If I've been like jiu-jitsu or something in the morning, I've gone and done some writing, and then I go up to a show and I go on and I'm sober. Great, but waiting to go on stage, waiting around in comedy. The reason so many comedians drink and do drugs and gamble is because being on the road's fucking boring.
Mm.
It's really boring. You're waiting to do your show all day, so you've got to find a thing to do. And if the football's not on, if something's not happening, you're just sat in a town centre all day. So that's where like the pub for a comedian becomes like, hey, I can go have a few drinks before a show and I can sit on my phone. I think there's nothing better than being in a pub on your own, just having a scroll on your phone, just having a drink, like in the group chat or just watching videos on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's one of the great pints.
Mm.
It's weird, because like you sort of realise that when you can't drink, like how good it is. Like when I was in Rome this weekend for the marathon, the day before, we had to go and pick up a number. Obviously, you're not going to drink, but we're three friends out there. We're thinking, oh, what else can we do? Because you don't want to walk too much. You don't want to knack your legs out. You're sort of thinking, I'd just like to sit in a pub, and I've already had like three Diet Cokes. It's probably about enough sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel that when I'm training for like a competition or something. I mean, I think... especially when you're doing something like a marathon or a competition and you can't drink, you find other sort of vices. Yeah. But then another thing that I know is like a lot of fighters do is like you just switch to vodka.
Right.
So you just go into like, instead of going out and having four pints, you just have four shots of vodka.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And vodka, I like drinking because my hangovers are fine on it because there's less. I think beer gives you some of the worst hangovers just because you're so full.
Mm.
You've just drunk such a large quantity of liquid. Whereas like that's why like some spirit drinking is, I think, all right.
Well, you get two bottles or cans in your marine underwater. What's your first choice?
This is going to annoy people. I went with BrewDog Punk.
It will annoy some people.
That's gonna,
we're a judgment-free zone.
Oh, yeah, but I'm pushing it with K-Sider and BrewDog Punk's pushing it.
It's whatever you want.
It wouldn't have liked it, but that's absolutely fine. It's your pub. What's the reasoning?
Comedy club I work at, Top Secret, serves it as just a bottle of beer. So I work there twice a week, sort of where I grew up doing stand-up. And whenever I put video content out, because I've bought a BrewDog beer, the comments are always, fucking BrewDog drinking shit. like people get so angry that you've had a BrewDog. And I'm going, but it's the beer. It's the bottled beer that they've got. I don't...
Yeah.
And the other ones, they've got like Stella and Corona.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Stella's too on the nose for me. I need with a bottle of Stella's. Like, I can't. Yeah. And like, I don't really. Corona, again, was a drink I drank when I was 16, but I don't think it's a good beer.
Yeah.
So, BrewDog, I quite like it.
It's in this position, isn't it, where it gets shat on from people who think it's Poncy on one side, and then people who are into sort of craft beer and think it's rubbish on the other side, sort of thing, and just come together in this sort of.
I hate their pub in Waterloo.
I've never been.
It's discreet.
This is a really massive one.
It's forced adult fun. Like, hey guys, we've got a slide and about everything I hate in a pub.
Yeah.
Everything I hate.
Yeah.
Sure, I just want somewhere to sit and drink with my friends. Yeah. Don't force fun on me.
Mm.
Yeah. This is the UK. We don't do that here. Yeah. Like, you know, if you go to the States, fine. But like bars, dive bars in the States are fucking the best.
Yeah.
I love them. But when it's like, there's a slide and we've got this, we've got this cool like DJ on and all of this stuff. I'm like, man, I just what's wrong with sitting down with your friends? I'm already going to drink your beer, your BrewDog beer that I quite enjoy. Some of them are good. I don't like all of them, but whatever. Why can't you just let me enjoy my night with the company I'm with? That's what drinking's about, is being the people you're with, rather than this. There's a slide. You're a grown up. Why do you need to go down a slide?
It's
fucking pathetic. It's just in your face.
Do people use it?
Yeah,
it'd be great if nobody ever went down.
It should go into a furnace. Why is somebody going down a slide? As you've watched some like mortgage broker in Waterloo go down a slide. I can't. Yeah. And there's like a bowling bit, and look at a pool table. Fine.
Yeah. Darts.
Yeah, you get away with maybe a bit of poker going on.
Okay.
But once you start bringing bowling into the pub. Like, what have we done? Where have we gone wrong as a species? Yeah. Bowl is what you do when you're 12 and it's like your birthday and you got a mega bowl. but I like the beer. All of that. I like their product. I know there's people listening going to go, oh, they've got allegations of bullying and all of this stuff. I'm sorry that the people who run that alcohol company are not great human beings. I know that that's a shock to everyone, that the people who literally live off the borderline addictions that people like myself have and profit off it so they can drive a Ferrari are not nice. But that's, you know, oh man, wait till you hear about oil. That's even worse.
You do worry about where things are going to end, don't you, with slides in pubs and all that. Like. Yeah. We're probably not that far off the first BrewDog bull pond in a pub.
The pub bouncy. A pub bouncy castle would be all right, actually.
Yeah, you know what? But some pubs I've been to have had bouncy castles outside for the kids sort of thing, and it's...
I know, what point did the adults go, come on, get off, I'm going on.
Yeah, there's definitely a few injuries. Growing up
drunk adults on bouncy castles. Yeah. I once had to pretend to be Jarvis Cocker. To dress up as Jarvis Cocker on a bouncy castle. And have a fight with someone else dressed up as JK from Jamiroquai.
What?
It was for Harry Hill sketch. Like, I can't even remember what it was about, but we were in the background having a fight on a bouncy castle. Yeah. Yeah. It was great fun.
Nice. Yeah. So bouncy castle allowed, slides not allowed.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fabulous.
But I do like what BrewDog do with their beer. I think they make decent beer. I know that loads of people are going to tweet in and send me death threats because I dare enjoy something that they don't. But the Punk IPA beer, it's a good beer.
It certainly did change a lot of stuff, didn't it? From years of having quite often dreadful beers to suddenly have this, it was a sort of pioneer of the sort of crafty things reaching the mainstream.
Quite like it.
And like I say, like, you know, I love a Guinness, but... Yeah. Everyone likes a Guinness. It's not an interesting drink anymore. Yeah. I think in that terms of like, you know, everyone can drink a Guinness, but like a brew, you go to a bar. Also, just the fun of everyone else ordering a Guinness, and then you go, oh, "Can I get a Punk IPA? Or can I get a Hazy Jane? Who's this?" you just fucking annoy. You just annoy a load of people who have gone out with mutual friends. Yeah. I quite enjoy that as well.
So in your pub, you could have a nice big. Fridge, like as soon as you walk in, you just see it, and it's just full ceiling to floor of punk IPA.
Yeah,
just stand there going, "What?"
It's a good, yeah. Maybe you can make
a feature of it. Make a sort of questionable company's fridge sort of thing. Right. I have a new beer from Nestle and things. Shell, right Shell next, lager,
right next to my Marlboro cigarettes. Marlboro Gold cigarettes. That's you know, and you can smoke indoors in this pub as well. You should be allowed. Past a certain time, should be allowed to smoke indoors.
Yeah.
And there's something great about the smoking area, I think.
Yeah.
The smoking area is, I like the occasional cigarette. And there is something brilliant about you and your mates going out for a little debrief on what's going on and having a cigarette and like bumping into other people in the smoking area and having a chat. I think the smoking ban is obviously a good thing, but the social aspect it is created is one of the greatest things ever done in pub culture. But I'd definitely have the BrewDog next to Punk IPA next to the cigarette machine.
Okay, you have a morally dubious section of the pub. I like it. What do we know about BrewDog Punk IPA, Dan?
Well, it was their first beer that they made when they started, when they were sort of a proper small owned startup thing in 2007. And then, yeah, I read that it sort of changed. So one of the secrets, this is Martin Dickey, one of the founders, said one of the secrets of its longevity is that it's not the original beer that they had in 2007, and his tastes have grown and developed, and they've changed the processes and the techniques and the ingredients even. So it's sort of quite most beers, like if you read about, you know, on almost every beer website, they'll talk about, this is the same recipe we had from the first ever beer we made in 1885, yeah. You know, whatever. He's sort of going, yeah, we've made this beer for 17 years ago and it's changed quite a lot, but we still called it the same thing and people still like it.
Well, the thing as well with all these craft things, a lot of them, they're very sort of hop heavy and they'll fade quite quickly. So they have to be made to sit on a supermarket shelf for months, which I presume the original recipe.
Yeah, because they were just selling it out of the back of a van in Fraserburgh. You know, you're Fraserburgh? You're Scottish?
I've heard of it. I've never
I'm probably saying it wrong. Fraserburgh?
I don't know. I've seen it written.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for your Scottish input.
Thank you. I'm more West. Okay. What's your second bottle or can?
I've got San Miguel. So, yes, San Miguel is, again, the reason I chose San Miguel is because it's a good day drinking beer. So I've always, with each of these, I've gone with one that I've like gone, there's like a reason behind it. There's like a bit of history and one that I generally enjoy, and so much so that I forgot. but San Miguel I have down as like, that's my Madrid, where if I go on holiday, I like a San. If I'm sat in the sun,
yeah,
I love a San Miguel. There's something very, and I love the glass it comes in and the foam. And
the glass it comes
it's
in.
It's quite like, it's almost like triangular, like quite, it's just this big, big at the bottom. And it's just, I think that's a proper fun, if you're in Spain somewhere and you just sat on the beach, do you have a San Miguel just out of the bottle? And I didn't realize it was made in the Philippines. Which so it's not even really it's like a Spanish.
That was a shock for us. We found
it
out recently.
Yeah, but it was Spanish founders, but they were in the Philippines when they did it, so kind of Spanish.
Yeah. But I think that's a real fun, like, again, you're with your pals. You know, you sat, you're watching the Euros or the World Cup, you're in a beer garden, there's a big screen.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a San Miguel. Yeah. And there's something like, something about sat in the sun with that beer that just brings me so much joy.
Yeah, it feels like a good sunny beer, I think. Yeah. I like San Miguel.
And you could drink, like, again, like you can drink them. Like if you're staying out drinking, you can really enjoy those beers. You can really, you know, you could put them away, but you can also just have a couple, which I think is a good thing that a beer can do. Like it's just, you know, hey, you want to ruin the next 3 days of your life? I can do that. You want to have a couple then go home? I can do that.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, I respect that in a beer.
Yeah, I know. Quayside is not offering you. No, that, okay. That's not saying just have a couple, you'll be fine tomorrow, mate. Yeah,
Quayside is let's break your marriage up.
Yeah. We're going to have one part of me and destroy your life.
Yeah, you're going to be dressed as Superman on the weekend trying to get your kids back. That's what Quayside is for. And I know, again, there's going to be people listening to this who are big fans of alcohol that are in a way that I don't drink for the reasons that you may drink, or trying to taste the notes and try. Although there's a couple of selections on there that I have chose that for later on. But again, I think, and I can't reiterate enough, the company you're with, when I think of a beer that I've had fun on, or I've been sat with my mates, so one of them passes you a cigarette, you're sat in the sun, England are winning, you're having a good day, you go get a nice meal afterwards, San Miguel. That's a fucking great beer to do it on.
Yeah, that's a lot of it, isn't it?
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Is the people you're with and the sort of environments you have it. We've talked quite a bit about Red Stripe on here, sort of thing. That makes me think of Notting Hill Carnival or a gig or something like that sort of thing. So certain drinks, it's not really the taste, it's more what you associate it with.
Yeah, the occasion, definitely. Yeah.
I went to Benidorm on a mate's stag do last year, and I was disgusted at how much I fitted in. I really like to think I'm a man of culture, and yeah. I was there like watching people go around in mobility scooters all day going, look, when I'm 60, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. You went in there thinking you were going to be disgusted. Yeah. You're like, my people.
Everyone I've been recording this Radio 4 series the few days prior. I told everyone I was going, and he's like, quite Radio 4 people, and they're like, oh God, man, no, when we go to Spain, we go to, you know, we go to like the Basque region. Yes. We have all this tapas and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I guess I'd rather do that. And I like, from the minute I was there, I was like, oh, this is fucking brilliant. 75p a beer and there's chips. Chicken, zero. Dos cerveza, por favor. I speak English, mate. Yeah, Thank you. Like, you know, and you're out there and you're like, what I love about when you go to a place like Benidorm or Tenerife is there's always like an Ibrox bar and a Celtic bar. And you're like, I love that. That's what we export as a country. It's like sunsea secretarianism. Like, that's what we do. Like, we import the worst of our culture.
Yeah.
And I think there's a fun thing about being British. Yeah. Is you've just got to laugh at that. You just got to go, God, we're such scum. Like, yeah. Wherever we go, we're just going to make, we're just going to make awful. But go there. Embrace that shit. Embrace that you're part of that. Even enjoying it ironically, you're still enjoying it. Yeah. And you'll have a good time. And that 75p of San Miguel.
I love it when you go somewhere like Spain and there's a English pub, what's called something like EastEnders.
Yeah.
Because, like,
the film
I'm not
Mitchell.
Into EastEnders. I know people who are into EastEnders sort of thing. I don't know anyone who's so into EastEnders that they would go, that's got to be the name of our pub. We've got to name it after EastEnders.
It's a place I've always wanted to drink in Blackpool. I'm obsessed with Blackpool whenever I gig there because it's so, so bad. And I think it's a Diana Memorial pub, if I remember correctly. And I'm always like,
wow,
I want to go in and drink in the Princess Diana pub.
Yeah, I want to have a pint
in the Princess Diana, but I might have misremembered. It might be the Queen. It might even be the Queen Mother. But it's someone like, and you're like, fuck yeah, I want to go in there and then get drunk and start giving my opinions on the royal family.
Yeah.
And see
what happens.
And just, as I'm having the shit kicked out of me, like, I'd be like, that'd be a fucking great night.
Yeah.
I went to Vegas again on a stag do last year and very two different friends on the economics spectrum. My mate, when I was going out of Vegas, was like, I was like, dude, what's it like? He's like, all right. He's like, it's like the Blackpool of America, but he's like, everything. Have you guys been to Vegas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything you think about black, he's like, you've got to understand. It's like, it's awful, but it's American awful. So it's amazing. And I got out there, man, and I was like, this is like, you have to come in. This is like Mecca for the West, where if you are born in Western society, you have to come here and realize every bad thing that's going to happen to the West in over the next 100 years is absolutely deserved, because there is a fountain show in the middle of the desert during a water crisis.
Yeah.
It is fucking insane. And you go there and you go, this is awful. And you walk from one hotel to the other. You have to go up these like stairs because the road, you can't just cross a road because the roads are so big. You have to go up these special walkways. And you walk out of like a $1 billion casino and you walk across, and there's just mental health problem after mental health problem on these walkways. Like, I saw one guy covered, shirtless, just drawn in crayon, just get, and you have to like walk past him and you go, oh my God, what the fuck? And then you go in and you're like, oh my God, this hotel has a roller coaster inside it. And you immediately forget about the mental health crisis. And drinking there was some of the best drinking I've ever done. Yeah. That was like, you just go from casino to casino, drink. That was like proper one of the best pub crawls I've ever done. Yeah. Just going casino to casino, and they're gradually getting nicer and nicer.
Yeah.
But we were getting drunker and drunker. It's fucking excellent.
You've got no idea of time. I was there with drinking my wife, and we looked outside, and there was a guy with a briefcase going to work. I was like, oh, it's morning. It's sunny outside.
Yeah. Yeah, you have no clue. Idea. There's no clocks anywhere. You're barely ever staring at your phone. Yeah. You're just, that is one of the greatest places in the world I've ever drunk.
I consider, my view on Las Vegas is, it is the best place in the world for 3 days. And on the fourth day, I would rather die than remain there for another minute because you're just so broken. You say, we literally went, we woke up after, I didn't know what time it was, like tired, hungover and all this. We just went, we need to get out of here or I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
And we had just, I think we just hired a car and went to San Francisco. I can't stay here anymore.
I was there for 6 days.
Too much?
Yeah, awful.
Yeah.
Because the gambling and the drinking. I think if you went out there and went, hey, the first 2 days we're going to do the gambling and the drinking and all that, and then in the next four, we're going to go see some stuff.
Shows and stuff, yeah.
That's when, and because Vegas, it's not just the gambling and drinking, it does everything.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, we're going to go to some nice restaurants and that, but you're just sat there in a Wendy's going, fuck. Fuck, man. Like, when's this going to end?
Okay, phones away, put a gag on Siri, it's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
Elliot, do you like a pub quiz?
They've been ruined by the mobile phone.
Okay. Well,
I do like a pub quiz. Yeah.
Well, Dan's got one here for us to do.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's about. I don't know the questions. We can compete in a friendly way, and I will put my mobile phone on the floor now.
Well, I did one with my mate, comedian Kai Humphries, and his wife, and we went down to a pub and we did one, and everyone just had their phone out and was looking at the answers.
Oh,
and you know when it's like, what was the name of the ship that sunk in the American Civil War off the coast of Massachusetts? And then like, a bunch of Glaswegians would say the name and you'd be like, right, well, no, you didn't all know that.
Yeah.
That's like, nobody in here knew that.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, you know, you've got a strict no mobile phone rule. Yeah, well, I thought we'd do a quiz about other people with who've got names relating to metal. So it's like it's a metallic.
Let's do it.
It's a metallic quiz.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that's
it's route one.
Knows, but yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Okay. Marvellous. So I don't know the answer to this either. We will compete. Dan will ask the questions, but you don't answer now. We'll do that in the second half of the show. So we'll just, sure. This is just for thinking time.
Yeah, have a little think. Okay. Question one. What metallic name links Charles Dickens to the Great Wall of China? Okay.
Okay.
Question two. Mike Tyson used the nickname Iron Mike in his career, but he had two other nicknames. I'll give you a point if you can name either of them. So you'd have to name both. Either of them. And question three, who wore the number two shirt for the England women's team at the 2023 World Cup? And do you want a fourth?
Yeah, if you've got one.
What? It's an easier one. Maybe. What comic character was invented by the cartoonist Hergé? Belgian.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's the only one I'm
going to
get.
I think saying Belgium.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Not, there's loads of Belgium. So thank you. Okay. Well, we will do those answers in the second half of The Moon Underwater. We'll see you soon in part two, where Elliot Steele will continue creating his dream pub.